In our new series, World War II's Greatest Battles, we chart five pivotal moments that shaped the course of the conflict with military historian James Holland. New episodes drop every Thursday on the History Extra podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome to the History Extra podcast. Fascinating historical conversations from the makers of BBC History Magazine. Elizabeth I is probably best remembered as an aging monarch, with a white powdered face and a big red wig. But she was actually just 25 when she came to the throne, and had by then already led a dramatic and tumultuous life. As author and historian Nicola Tallis argues in her new book, Young Elizabeth, the Queen's childhood and early years had a lasting impact on her as a ruler and as a woman. Lauren Good spoke to Nicola to find out more.
Hi, Nicola. Thanks so much for joining me today on the podcast.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me, Lauren.
Your new book, Young Elizabeth, Princess, Prisoner, Queen, is described as the first truly comprehensive biography of the young monarch in over 20 years. What is it about Elizabeth that draws your interest?
Do you know, I think that there has been so much written about Elizabeth, mostly about her time as queen. And originally, I was quite interested in that side of her life as well. But when I began looking into her younger years, I actually realised quite quickly that it was actually that path to queenship that really interested me more, because it was so uncertain. And we look back at Elizabeth now and, you know, she's in many circles revered as being one of our greatest monarchs, in some circles reviled, but she's certainly talked about. But I think that that's all with the benefit of hindsight. And at the time of Elizabeth's birth and in the years leading up to her accession to the throne, becoming queen was by no means a certainty for her. The path was really littered with trials and tribulations. And I just found that was such a fascinating story in its own right, and one that really deserved the limelight.
You provide such an intimate insight into Elizabeth in this book as a young child and then a young woman rather than a queen. How much did you discover about her personality in her youth?
Quite a lot, actually. I think I had the great privilege of being able to go back and look at some of Elizabeth's letters that were written during her youth. And I think that these do really give us some great insights into her personality. And I think what was quite interesting, when you look at her from this human kind of perspective, you do actually just see a young girl, a teenager, a young adult who is extremely vulnerable, who is in fear for her life at times. But also, it's quite interesting to see the way in which her personality develops over time, in so much that she becomes much shrewder. And I think that that's something that comes with, yeah, age and unfortunate experience. So yeah, we do see insights into her personality and how it changes and develops during her youth as a result of the events that she's been through.
And of course, this book centres on Elizabeth, but you also discuss the troubles her half-sister Mary faced in the earlier part of the book. How did Henry VIII treat her?
Terribly, to be perfectly honest. He treats Mary terribly. And I think that that's really sad, because this relationship that Mary had with Elizabeth, it's one of the most important of both of their lives. It's so critical to both of their identities. And I think the tragedy of it for both of these girls is that it did actually have the potential to be very close. At times we see that it was quite close, but I think that it's Henry that really is the fly in the ointment in some respects, because the relationship is almost doomed to failure from the start, just because of the circumstances in which Elizabeth is born and the fact that her mother, Anne Boleyn, also treats Mary terribly. And I think that this has a really deep, lasting psychological impact on Mary, and one that is later manifested in Elizabeth's direction. But I think, without doubt, that all stems from the treatment that Mary received at the hands of both Henry and Anne Boleyn.
And Mary's accounts provided you with a lot of insight into Elizabeth's upbringing. How much do we know about what Elizabeth's childhood would have actually looked like?
So as always, there are frustrating gaps in the evidence, but yeah, we do know quite a lot about Elizabeth's childhood. And you mentioned Mary's accounts there, which show that Mary was making gifts to Elizabeth. She was giving her money with which to play cards. She was buying her little presents, and she was also making gifts of money to members of Elizabeth's household. And we also know from the letters of Elizabeth's governess, Lady Bryan, we get some really, really interesting insights and quite touching, charming insights into Elizabeth as a youngster. So we see, for example, she talks about, Lady Bryan talks about when Elizabeth's teething, she talks about the whole weaning process. And that's really something that's quite intimate. You know, these sorts of details you don't always get in the records, even for royal children. So we do know a fair bit about Elizabeth and how she was raised. And, you know, we also know she was raised, certainly for a time, surrounded by all of the trappings of royalty. We know that Anne Boleyn was spending money on clothes for her, so she would have been very, very richly dressed. And to all intents and purposes, raised fully, as one would expect a royal child to be raised.
Do you have a favourite detail you discovered about her early life?
I loved the fact, actually, there's only one surviving set of Elizabeth's household accounts from later on during the reign of Edward VI, when she's living as the king's sister. And I think that these are quite interesting, actually, because they do kind of give details of her relationships. And I suppose this isn't one set fact as such, but I think I just loved the fact that we could see from this that she was very much in touch with people on her mother's side of the family. She forms very close relationships with them. And we do kind of just get this insight into how she's spending her money. So unsurprisingly, because she was very interested in scholarship, she's buying books. There's money that's outlaid for clothes. She gives some money to scholars as well. And on one occasion, she treats herself to a walnut table, which I think is quite nice. It's quite interesting when we look at these accounts, because they sort of reconfirm everything that we think we know about her from other sources in some ways. So that love of scholarship, we really see that shining through. And these family relationships obviously meant a great deal to her.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The holidays have arrived early with Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale. Upgrading window coverings can be a minor project with a major impact. Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Browse premium blinds, shades, shutters. We have your patio covered too. And get unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Free shipping and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday sale now. Save up to 45% plus premium doorbusters. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And Elizabeth's early existence seems to be very much a reverse tale of rags to riches. Despite being born a girl, she is still the heir to the throne and is treated as such, but then finds herself in the same position as her half-sister Mary upon the death of her mother, Anne Boleyn. How would this switch have affected her life?
Well, according to one account, it doesn't take Elizabeth long to realise that this has affected her life, because one account tells us that she had mentioned to the head of her household, Sir John Shelton, "How hath it yesterday, Princess, Lady Princess, and today Lady Elizabeth." So she is apparently very precocious from a young age and recognises that people are perhaps addressing her differently. There is also some suggestion that she may have suffered slight neglect from her father in terms of the fact that Lady Bryan, her governess, soon after Anne Boleyn's execution, is writing to Thomas Cromwell to say, "Look, Elizabeth's growing out of all her clothes. We really need some clothes here, like, please help." And it's difficult to know. I don't think that that's actually willful neglect as such. I think it's just a sign that perhaps at this time, Elizabeth's new stepmother, Jane Seymour, was preoccupied with other matters. We know that she does spend money on clothes for Elizabeth, but I think that it's a sign that Elizabeth isn't actually a priority necessarily for those around her. Anne Boleyn had been meticulous in making sure that her daughter was well clothed, well cared for. And I think that with her gone, there's just not that same watchful care. The king is far too busy. I think it's very obvious that he loves Elizabeth and cares for Elizabeth, and contemporaries do note this. But yes, she is no longer considered to be the king's heir, obviously. And so she's treated definitely with the respect that one would expect, but she's not necessarily in the forefront of everyone's minds anymore.
What do you think Elizabeth actually thought of her father?
That's such a great question, and it's one that's really tricky to answer, because we don't know exactly how Elizabeth came to learn of her mother's death, or that it was her father who was responsible for issuing the orders for that. But she does seem to have basically hero worshipped him. And we see that in her surviving letter to Henry, there's only one, and it's written as a preface to a New Year's gift that she gives him. And it's very obvious from this that she's very keen to identify herself as Henry's daughter. She's very eager to please him. And I think that this is perhaps also a sign of the instability that she'd been faced with while she was growing up, and just really a sign that she's craving this normality of a family life and domestic stability, and that she just really wants her father to love her. So I think she does love him. I think she must fear him in some way as well, because she would have been acutely aware of the fact that not only had Henry executed her mother, but had done the same with one of our other stepmothers, Catherine Howard. So I think that there is this real desire by her to stay in his good books. And I think that that's probably the overriding feeling.
You spoke about Elizabeth craving family life there. You discussed the women who married Henry VIII, but instead of viewing them from the perspective of their role as wives, you instead look at them from Elizabeth's point of view as stepmothers. You say she gained and lost three stepmothers in less than 6 years. What were her relationships like with these women?
Well, certainly for the first three of these stepmothers, Jane Seymour, Anne of Cleves and Catherine Howard, we don't know a great deal. I mentioned earlier that Jane Seymour did buy Elizabeth some clothes, but I think that there wasn't really enough time for that relationship to develop just by nature of the fact that Jane is dead, you know, within 18 months of being married to Henry. And Anne of Cleves, we don't know a lot about her relationship with Elizabeth at the time that Anne was married to Henry. But certainly later, she and Elizabeth are very close during Mary's reign, so it seems. So it does seem likely that some kind of good relationship had formed at some point. So that relationship does seem quite strong. And Catherine Howard does seem to have taken an interest in Elizabeth as well. We see in Catherine's jewel inventory that she does make a gift of a jewel to Elizabeth. And of course, there were ties of blood between Catherine and Elizabeth, because Catherine Howard was, of course, Anne Boleyn's cousin. So there is another reason for Catherine to be interested in Elizabeth. But it is Catherine Parr, really, who is the foremost influence in Elizabeth's life in terms of stepmothers. And she was someone who was so well suited to that role. And given the fact that by the time Catherine Parr married Henry VIII in the summer of 1543, she was already a stepmother on account of the two children of her deceased second husband. And I think, therefore, she was well primed for this role of stepmother. And Elizabeth seems to have warmed to her immediately. And I think it was definitely, without doubt, one of the most important and influential relationships of Elizabeth's life.
And after Henry's death, Catherine married Sir Thomas Seymour. How did this union create a complex situation for Elizabeth?
Oh, goodness, it's so complicated, because Elizabeth really loved Catherine. And I think in the aftermath of Henry VIII's death, she must have felt uncertain as to what the future held for her. So the offer to be able to go and live with her stepmother, I think, must have been very welcome to her. And then, yeah, Thomas Seymour arrives on the scene, this really dashing, attractive, charismatic and in some ways irresistible gentleman, but someone who's also ruthless, ambitious, can be quite cruel. But Elizabeth does seem to be absolutely captivated by him. Everybody who knows Thomas Seymour in some respects seems to be captivated by him. Catherine Parr is head over heels in love with him, but it does, of course, completely change the dynamics of the relationship between Elizabeth and Catherine. Thomas arriving on the scene, he, I think, with Henry VIII removed and knowing that his nephew, the king, is just 9 years old, I think that really gives Thomas the confidence to move in on Elizabeth, if you like, and he does begin this flirtation with her, and one that will have devastating consequences for her on a personal level and also within the confines of these relationships. You know, she's only 14 around this time, and she is perhaps not quite as politically aware as she will later become. But later on, she does learn from this experience and she starts to become good at masking her feelings.
And Catherine sadly died after having Seymour's child. It's interesting that Elizabeth witnessed so many women being tossed aside, including her half-sister, and also women dying during or following childbirth. How much do you think witnessing these women's experiences affected her decision not to marry or to have children?
Oh, I think it had a huge impact. I think that it was very clear early on that with marriage came risk, and not just risk of childbirth and death in childbirth, but also, yeah, as you mentioned, the risk of being tossed aside. Nothing was certain, nothing was a given. And I think that Elizabeth was terrified at the thought of marriage, actually. This aversion of Elizabeth to marry is instilled in her very, very early, I think. And she later says that it was during the reign of her half-brother, Edward VI, that she petitioned the king not to make her marry because she preferred to be single. And I think, well, is it any wonder that that's how she felt? Because not only, actually, does she have the example of her father's wives before her, but during Edward's reign, there are the king's advisors who are trying to also organise some kind of suitor for Elizabeth as well, and to thrust a husband upon her. And it's very clear that she doesn't want to marry any of these men. And then we see slightly later with even her cousin, Lady Jane Grey, who's forced to marry against her will. You know, I think that all of these examples showed to Elizabeth that marriage was by no means a happy course. It was by no means a stable course. And perhaps actually she was just much better off by herself. So I think that all of these experiences combined had definitely had a huge impact on her. And it's very interesting, I think, that by the time that Edward was king, so, you know, during which time Elizabeth is still a teenager, by that time already she'd made this decision that she didn't want to marry.
As time tumbles on, Elizabeth unfortunately faces even more hardship. She becomes involved in the Wyatt Rebellion. First of all, what was this?
Yeah, so the Wyatt Rebellion was a plot to overthrow Mary I, Elizabeth's half-sister, and replace her with Elizabeth. But it's also a plot to oppose the Spanish marriage that Mary was intending to Philip of Spain. So that's what's really at the core of it, is hatred of the Spanish, but also trying to topple Mary in the process.
And Elizabeth was imprisoned. How was she treated during this time?
Well, in some respects, we could say she was treated comfortably, because although she is taken to the Tower of London and we know she's in great fear of her life, she falls ill, which typically Elizabeth often did during times of stress. It's probably very likely that she was housed in the royal apartments at the Tower, possibly in the rooms in which her mother, Anne Boleyn, had been held. So I don't know. In some respects, you could say that that's cruel treatment. In some respects, you could say that it is treatment in accordance with her status. I think there's a bit of both going on there. She is allowed her servants, and she is allowed occasionally to go outside and stretch her legs, take the air. That's something that's really important to her throughout her life. But I think there's just this overwhelming anxiety hanging over her that she has no idea of what her fate may be. And I think that's what the real cruelty of her treatment is in this situation. Her living standards may have been comfortable enough, but just that uncertainty as to whether the axe may or may not fall, I think, is really taking its toll on Elizabeth during this time.
And you mentioned there about her frequently getting ill. There's a really interesting conversation you have with your brother-in-law about the possible reasons for this. Could you please tell listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it did really strike me when I was researching that Elizabeth does seem to fall ill quite frequently. A lot of the time, this can be linked with stressful situations, and we don't always know the details of her symptoms, but I did have an interesting conversation with my brother-in-law about this and his business partner, who work in neuroscience, just to try and get a bit of a different perspective. And they were trying to explain to me, and again, it's just a theory, it's not proven by any means, but they were trying to explain to me that Elizabeth would have been prone to physical illness before she was even born, purely by reason of the fact that her mother, Anne Boleyn, would have been extremely stressed during pregnancy. We know that Anne did have times of stress during her pregnancy, and who can blame her? There's a huge pressure on her shoulders to produce a male heir, and all of this would have been transmitted to Elizabeth. So there is this suggestion that before she'd even been born, there would have been problems there. And these are only exacerbated as Elizabeth's life unfolds. And so I think it is just quite interesting to consider this as another possibility and think, well, perhaps there is something more going on here. Perhaps, yes, these stressful situations are impacting on her health, but perhaps there are other things that we need to weigh up and take into consideration.
And Elizabeth was eventually liberated. What was her life like during the rest of Mary's reign?
Well, it's quite interesting, because In some ways, it's very sad because although she was liberated, she and Mary were never reconciled. So that closeness that had once existed between them, it fully vanishes, which I think is incredibly sad and tragic for both of them. And Elizabeth did live out the rest of Mary's reign, primarily away from court on her estates, which she seems to have been quite happy about for the most part. And there are other conspiracies against Mary with whispers of Elizabeth's name. But what's quite interesting is that Elizabeth never sees herself facing the same kind of danger she had done during the Wyatt Rebellion. And I think that this is quite interesting. I think it's a reflection of the fact that Mary, very sadly, doesn't have a child of her own to succeed her and recognises how popular Elizabeth is and doesn't dare to take action against her. And because of this, we see Elizabeth's confidence grow. So we see her going from someone who is absolutely terrified that her sister is going to execute her to someone who suddenly begins to recognise that perhaps her life is actually going to be safe and perhaps the future does hold something different for her than she had previously envisioned. And perhaps this possibility of queenship is soon going to become a reality.
And it did become a reality when Mary died on the 17th of November 1558. We know Elizabeth as a queen, but importantly, your book reframes her as a human being who endured significant hardship in her life. Reflecting on what we've discussed and what you cover so brilliantly in your book, what insight can Elizabeth's early life provide us into understanding the Tudor queen so many people find fascinating today?
I think that you can't actually fully come to know Elizabeth the Queen without understanding the story of her youth. And I think that actually that experience that she had during her youth is one of the reasons that she went on to become such a great queen. I think she appreciated it all the more. And I think that this experience that she had of uncertainty, of terror, of fear, all of this really helped to make her a shrewder character. It helped to really form her judgment. It made her naturally more cautious of those around her. And I think it also gave her a greater reliance on herself and also just this sense of trusting her own judgment and wanting to be the mistress of her own destiny. And I think that that is all as a result of these uncertain and tumultuous years that follow in the lead up to her becoming queen.
That was Dr. Nicola Tallis, who's an author and historian. Her book on Elizabeth is Young Elizabeth, Prisoner, Princess, Queen. And if you're interested in reading a feature by Nicola on Elizabeth's rivalry with her sister Mary, then check out the March issue of BBC History Magazine. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Daniel Kramer-Arden. Mm-hmm.